Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hello, friends. Welcome to part one of your Monday pods from the Kings of Anglia. I am Mark Heath, joined by the youngest of young guns, Alex Jones, and also the oldest of young guns, Roscoe. Welcome to transfer deadline day. Welcome to September. Lots of stuff happening. So we're going to do the pod in two parts today because obviously it's deadline day. So part one, this one you're going to get this morning, is going to be what's happened since we last spoke, because obviously they've signed four players since we last spoke, the Fantastic Four. And also they had, how can I describe it? A bit of a car crash of a game against Derby County on Saturday, but much like a car crash, it was also quite compelling. And there are lots of things to talk about. So we're going to talk about that as well. And then tonight, you're going to have the usual post-deadline day, husky-voiced, not quite as late show. But obviously we'll reflect on what has or indeed probably hasn't happened today and bring that to you as part two. Matching partnership companion for this show. So there we go. That's what we're going to do. First of all, let's find out what our young chums are up to. Rossi, you've just been telling us about your induction hob in your fancy new kitchen. How are you?
I'm very well. Happy new month, everybody. It's crazy. We're now in September already in 2025, but it just goes like that, doesn't it? But kitchen is pretty much all done. Just got to do a little bit of painting. Very happy with the cabinets and the induction hob that I've got. Already made loads of eggs on it. And it just, boom, done.
What's your favourite sort of egg, Ross?
Ooh, I like scrambled.
Yeah, solid.
Scrambled, man. Yeah. I like an omelette as well. But anything egg is my jam.
What's your go-to? Anything eggy? I'd go scrambled, poached, fried. I think. I don't know where I put boiled, actually, thinking about it. Anyway, I'm digressing. AJ, what's your favourite egg?
Poached, scrambled. Poached
top. Interesting.
Yeah, poached top. Poached, posh. Scrambled, fried. Shut up. Boiled, in that order.
Those boiled things. Bottom. Interesting. Okay, fair enough. We've all learned a lot about each other and our love for eggs to start the show. Let's talk about, before we get to Derby, sexy stuff, shall we, friends? Because there's been lots of very sexy stuff happening. And we haven't actually had a chance to talk about it in this virtual setting since it all kicked off. So since we last spoke, Town have signed a Fantastic Four. And it's been tremendous. Obviously, they signed Darnell Furlong. Then they signed Ivan Azon, the Shark, who, by the way, you may have noticed is one of my new favourite players at Ipswich Town, purely based on his nickname and the way he looks. And then, of course, they signed matey from down the road, Marcelino Nunes. And then they followed that up by getting a wonder kid who is a bit of a mystery, a bit of an enigma, Sindre Wally Egeli, which obviously is topical because we've been talking about eggs, Egeli. So, AJ, kick us off with your thoughts on this Fantastic Four, this brilliant quartet. Clearly, Nunes is probably the headline of all of that, but what do you make of it all?
Yeah, wow, been a busy few days, hasn't it? You picked a good couple of days to go off as well, which was fun.
You had Thursday off as well, friend.
No. I jest. I think that this, all in all, is what Ipswich needed for a couple of reasons. One, it obviously fills some key gaps in the squad, left by departures. We've seen Amari Hutchinson go, Nathan Broadhead go, and Town still were lacking in midfield ahead of kind of the end of the transfer window before signing Marcelino Nunez.
Oh, yes.
That's what you
I love the way you said that. Yeah.
Yeah. All things considered, I think that was important. They also needed to lift the mood a little bit, didn't they? And I think that plays a huge part. We had a tough couple of opening games. Birmingham, we've done this to death, but Birmingham was a difficult watch. Southampton, it still was extending that winless run at Portman Road. They're going up to Preston, and that was really grim, to be honest, or all of the hyperbole that I'd like to use. And there was disappointment and frustration that came out of that. Stop laughing, Ross. That came out of that trip to Deepdale. And I think that they just needed something like that little kind of 24, 48 hour period where they were just going out, spending money and bringing in players that we're all really impressed with. They've added well to bring in a top quality midfielder. I don't care about all of these medical comments and all the nonsense to do with that. You see the quality that he brings. Ivan Azon, I was really excited about when he first got linked and quite disappointed when Kieran McKenna said it wasn't going to happen. So to have him here is really good. Sindrawala Igeli as well we've seen him for a couple of weeks in terms of the YouTube highlight clips and then waiting for this one to get done. And we've all been really excited. And Darnell Furlong is also here as well. Which is look, Ipswich have come out and they've spent good money. There's going to be different narratives that get spun with the signings. They're injury prone or, you know, Ipswich have overpaid. But ultimately, this is what Ipswich needed to do. And when you look at the four as a whole, and we can talk through some of them in a minute, I think we can be pretty happy with what they've gone and got.
Let's not mess around, Rossi. There was a fair bit of negativity, you'd say, around things, the start of the season, the loss at Preston. Last week, it felt a bit like kind of walking through treacle. It was definitely not the best feeling to start the season. Frustration in the air, exasperation. And then Town, let's be honest, played an absolute blinder with one single bit of content around the Marcelino Nunes signing. That signing video was absolute elite tier stuff. What did you make? Because I was watching it, I was going, oh my goodness, this is brilliant. I immediately messaged Marcus and Andy, the Hutchman, to say that is amazing. It should win best Oscar for best dramatic short film or something. That was the one that really got people going, obviously. What do you make of that and the rest of the signings?
Yeah, obviously, me and Stu recorded a pod on Thursday just talking about, you know, latest transfers and rumours. And obviously, Nunes was the one that broke Wednesday evening. And yeah. So we sort of knew that's going to happen. And then, yeah, it was just a flurry of signings out of nowhere. The Nunes one, you know, group chats, everything were just blowing up. And obviously, when it got announced on Friday morning, it was just incredible. And obviously, Norwich fans crying and all that jazz. So, incredible bit of business. Mark Ashton has been attacking this window late on, last minute goals. You know, Ipswich Town obviously known to do that back in the day in League One and Championship. And positions we need to strengthen in. And as you guys were talking, I was just bringing up the Fantastic Four characters. And I was going to say to you boys, what should we do? Who's the out of the four? So you've got Mr. Fantastic, Invisible Girl, Invisible Woman. Sally, that's probably Furlong. Sorry, Darnell.
Yeah, that does seem to work, to be fair, yeah.
Yeah, the Human Torch and the Thing. So, Mr. Fantastic is probably Nunes, isn't it? Because that's the big one and he's like the main character. And then you've got him, Human Torch and then the Thing.
Confession, I've never seen the Fantastic Four. I don't know who any of these people are.
I haven't in years, but we'll go... hang on, what were they? Human Torch and the Thing.
I think Human Torch has to be Igeli, doesn't it? Because he's going to be flames.
Properly and, fast.
And from what I remember, the Thing is a bit of a unit, isn't it? Which kind of fits with Azon.
Yeah.
Who is you would say barrel-chested. And from what we saw of him on Saturday, also not averse to get into a bit of a scrap. Quite a physical presence, which I enjoyed. So we're saying Invisible Man Darnell Furlong.
Sorry,
he's kind of forgotten. I mean, of the four, you'd have to say. Mr. Fantastic is Nunes. The Human Torch is Igeli. And the Thing is Ivan Azon. That's brilliant. Where else would you get that analysis other than the Kings of Anglia podcast? Anything else to mention on these signings, AJ, in terms of excitement levels, thoughts, before we get on to Derby? Because we saw Azon for the first time on Saturday. Nunes and Igeli couldn't play, and Darnell Furlong was on the bench, obviously didn't come on. But in terms of filling the gaps that Town needed, and it felt like there was quite a lot of gaps that needed filling, they feel like they've done that pretty effectively.
Yeah, I mean, we can kind of just rattle through them briefly. Darnell Furlong's an interesting one. Will it lead to a potential departure at right back? We'll have to wait and see in the coming hours. It could free up Ben Johnson or Harry Clark to move on loan or permanence. But good to have him, and he's solid for the level. And I know there's a lot that's been said about, you know, it's a £3.5 million fee, but I think that's fine, to be perfectly honest, given how good he is. And also, as I'll come on to in a minute, given the state of the market, people know that Ipswich Town have money to spend, and we're about to see the British transfer record broken by Alexander Isak going to Liverpool for 130 million. It's the way that these things are trending, so I'm not really surprised. Azon, from what we've seen and what you saw as well, because you got to go to the game over the weekend, I think we were both really impressed by him, even though it was kind of limited in what he was able to do in a difficult match. I think that he gets himself about is the phrase we're going to use a lot. Exciting to watch, and I want to see him barreling in some people and getting quite far in and fired up. That would be quite good. Ageli, wow. I mean, again, we're talking about what we've seen from YouTube clips and things like that. It's such a different path that Ipswich have gone down in recruitment, hasn't it? Where you look at last summer and they signed, in terms of like proper unknown entities, it was Jens Kajusta, wasn't it? They didn't get anyone else in, and this has been a different window. And going out and breaking the championship transfer record on a 19-year-old Norwegian playing in Denmark is so exciting. It is such a big risk, of course it is, but you have to be able to take these risks, and Ipswich are able to do so because of the money that they've got available to them, and that is, yeah, he fits the profile. He's big, physical, fast, and has a real kind of intelligent movement about him that really works. And Nunez is the one that's going to come up the most, isn't he? Because of where he's come from, because of everything to do with that, because of the transfer fee. And there's so much that gets peddled in terms of he had 1 year left on his deal. It's a high transfer fee for that. He's got an injury record. He does have an injury record, but he's still played about 80% of Norwich's league games since he signed 3 years ago. He still was probably, if you looked at their best players in the last 3 years, he'd be, what, second, third? So to bring a player that weakens Norwich and strengthens Ipswich, he's a player that Ipswich want to have. He's a player that Ipswich have tracked clearly for a long time, clearly when they were in the Premier League and had a look at him. I just think he is going to offer something really good, and having a balance with him and Kajusta, where they don't also have to play 46 games because you can chop and change and rotate and give them an opportunity to have breaks and keep them fit. Yeah, the balance is looking so much healthier now, isn't it?
Yeah. And Nunez, obviously, the whole tapping the badge, the winking, the waving the Pride of Anglia scarf around. He fully understands, by the way, the significance of that, but he doesn't really care. He enjoys it. He's buying into it.
I think that it's almost done in a way that the transfer fee and everything about the move is paid off on what you achieve on a mental level as well. Like being able to raise the fan base. This is a fan base that, let's be honest, when looking at Norwich in recent years, has not been able to one-up them too many times, unfortunately. Being able to do that in such a way and kind of try and get the message across that the pendulum has swung, we're the big boys now, we're the club that are going to buy your best players, that is pretty exciting. So yeah. As much as it's a signing that the club want and have pushed for and will add to Ipswich, I just also think that in terms of lifting the mood and getting people back up and backing the team, I think that's also going to play quite a big part.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it felt like, wasn't it? The signing video was like a shot of adrenaline direct to the heart. And it's going to make October the 5th incredibly spicy, isn't it? I'm already looking forward to that. Right then. So that lifted the mood, friends. We were very high, I thought, going into Derby. And all of us predicted a win of varying levels of destruction. I went 4-0 because I thought, yes, momentum. They're going to come out like they played against Southampton, excuse me. And if they do that, they're going to run all over Derby. And they're going to get a big win. Ross, I think you went 3-0. AJ, you were slightly more thoughtful and went 2-1. And I think Stewie went 2-0. We all went Sammy Smodics, of course, with the first scorer, which meant he inevitably then started on the bench. And considering how we all kind of moved going into the game, I guess it wasn't ideal in terms of how the game played out. So I'm going to enforce a strict 45-minute limit on this podcast, which means we've got half an hour now to talk about Derby County. And boy, is there a lot to talk about, because as a game, it was like a soap opera. Anyway, let's first hear from Kieran McKenna, and then we can get right into it.
Probably the most broken, lowest ball in play game that I've been involved in. It was barely a football match, made worse by, for me, a really bad refereeing decision that should have us the opportunity to go 2-1 up. Made worse by us conceding a really poor goal on another long ball that we don't defend well enough. And then by opponent who, again, you can say did well or whatever adjective you want to completely break the game, stop the game. And I mean, that there was, you know, almost no ball in play time. We weren't able to get any rhythm in the game to build any the attacks that we would want to build. And it was really difficult. So we need to learn and do better in that phase. But honestly, it was also really difficult. So the big positive from that phase is the fact that we found the equaliser, because I think it's, you know, it's a long time since we've had one. Lows at Portman Road. For this group, probably the first time. If I say it was certain, obviously the first time for boys who have just arrived, but even players who were here last year. So a late goal that gets us a point on the board with subs involved in the action. I think that could be a big, big positive for us, and we're going to need more of those as it goes along. So, yeah, there was loads in there, to be honest. We've been for a lot in the game today, and the support has been for a lot. There was a really good performance out there where you can see the growth in the team. You can see the direction of travel. You can see players coming in now having a big impact and the potential for us to really push on. But you can also see, you know, the challenges of the division, how hard people are going to make it for us, how we're probably not up to full speed yet to do it for 90 minutes, how we probably don't have the full, you know, the consistency and the confidence in the group to really stay strong in that moment when it went against us with the first goal and we really did lose our way. So you can see where we could get to and where we're travelling in many aspects. You can see some of the growth that we still need, and in the end, hopefully a really good moment for us.
Right, I'm going to start with you then, Rossi. I guess the first thing we should say is they didn't lose. Because had they gone down 2-1, which is, for all intents and purposes, the way it looked like it was going to finish, this would have been, again, a very different kind of mood this morning. But they got the draw. Jack Clark obviously got the 106th minute penalty, nerves of steel, and we'll come on to that in due course. But in terms of the game itself, how do you reflect on it? Because they certainly didn't start like I expected them to start. I expected them to come out like they did against Southampton, like the shorts were on fire, and they didn't. And then they grew into it. They obviously got themselves on top, and we were feeling, I think, pretty good at half time. Then they conceded two piss poor goals, you'd have to say. And then it didn't really feel like they were going to get back into it. So how do you reflect on it now, a couple of days later?
Yeah, it wasn't a great spectacle, was it? I remember speaking to my Derby Insight man, and he said it's going to be a terrible game. And he was right, because for most part, it was. I will admit, at half time, I thought, okay, Town, we're here now. We need to score another, because 1-0, you know, as the cliche is, it's not a good scoreline most of the time, because, you know,
dangerous.
Dangerous, yeah. That's the one. Dangerous. And when Derby went in the lead, I went, oh, bloody hell, the atmosphere is going to be really bad. But I always felt Town would, out of nowhere, would find something. Even though we weren't creating chances, I always just felt this team finds a way. Okay, they didn't do it at Preston, but at Portman Road, even though our record's dreadful at the moment, I always felt there was just something. We had enough quality there to find a goal, definitely with the subs. You know, we've now got that strength in depth on the bench. But yeah, it wasn't a great game. Derby made sure it wasn't, you know, with all the, you know, time wasting and, you know, physical play. But yeah, it just was a frustrating watch. And I know a lot of Town fans, they're not happy at the moment about McKenna's decisions and substitutions. But fair play to Town. They went to the end to find a goal. And yeah, we got the penalty, which was a penalty. And yeah, it wasn't a great game at all.
It wasn't, but I found it very compelling, because there was so much going on. There was always some kind of flashpoint or something to talk about, wasn't there? Watching it, AJ, what did you make of it as a whole?
I used the term after the Birmingham game, beautifully violent, which I thought fitted it quite well. This one probably felt less beautiful, and it would have been compelling if I wasn't so frustrated as well. And I think, to be honest, if I was a Derby County fan, I would have loved every single second of that. I thought that would have been brilliant, because I think that they were the perfect foil for everything that Ipswich wanted to do in terms of, let's be honest, time wasting, in terms of slowing the game down, in terms of being physical and aggressive, but also playing with a tempo. And Ipswich at times matched that and showed what they were able to do, and at times didn't quite have that as well. It's weird to sit here and say it was a poor quality game when it's a 2-2 draw, but ultimately that's the way it panned out. When you look at the stats and the numbers behind it, it echoes probably a similar kind of thing as well. A team that hasn't quite found their feet against a side that is going to be probably slap bang in mid-table in the Championship this year. So as much as I do kind of agree in a sense that I found it compelling, the biggest feeling from me was just frustration that things just weren't able to click, and frustration also at the way that Derby played the match, which they are entitled to do unless the referee says they're not. So you kind of have to say fair play, and that's what you've got to learn to deal with in this league.
Yeah, we'll come on to the refereeing in a bit, because clearly that's one of several major talking points. It's weird. At the end of the game, I kind of thought, how, even though it was, you know, they needed a 106-minute penalty to get a draw, I thought, how have they not won that? Because obviously they had a penalty denied, should have been a red card. It's one of those games where it felt weird at the end, and I wasn't really sure how I felt about it. But anyway, you got a bit starry-eyed, AJ, because you spoke to Ashley Young after the game. Now, obviously, Ashley Young, Mr. Big Stuff, he's been there, he's done it. And you were kind of sharing that you enjoyed talking to him from that point of view, you know, a guy who's a bit of a legend in terms of what he's achieved and the places he's been.
Yeah, I mean, for context, I hate Manchester United, like, and everything, like most people who grew up not supporting Manchester United while they were good, like, you don't really like them. But when I was stood there realising, hang on, this guy's won the Premier League under Sir Alex Ferguson. He's won the FA Cup, the Carabao Cup, the Europa League. He's won the Serie A title with Inter Milan. He's a 40-odd cap England international. I was like, wow, this is kind of cool that I'm stood in the mix zone at Portman Road leading an interview with him. So, yeah, that was kind of a pretty cool moment. And I then, it kind of also makes you wonder as well, where you have these players, maybe especially younger players as well, that are sat there playing with him and also thinking, hang on, I'm in the same team as someone who's won the Premier League here. Yeah, quite a cool experience.
Anyway, let's hear what he said, and then we can get on to the various talking points around the game and other thoughts arising.
Ashley, a 2-2 draw today, a little bit of everything in that game. What do you make of that one?
I think you've got to take the positives out of it. Obviously, the character for us to get back into the game so late on. You know, I think on a different day, if we go 2-0 up, it's a totally different game, and we walk away with 3 points. And, you know, I think if there was a couple more minutes, then maybe we'd have got that third goal. But, you know, like I say, we take the positives out of it, go into the international break, and then, you know, we come back again fighting as we showed.
Yeah, a scrappy game. It feels like this is a group, given the players that you've got, wants to play football sometimes. In these games, you have to show that kind of grit, and you had that at times as well in this one.
Yeah, of course, we had that that resilience and, like I say, that grit. And, you know, you need that at times, especially with teams that, you know, when we've come out of the Premier League, teams are going to come and sit behind the ball, and, you know, we have to break them down. We've got to be patient. But, you know, like I said, especially that first half, we were on top. And, like I say, if we got that second goal, I think it would have been a different game. But, you know, we definitely take the positives out of today. And, you know, I think we've been saying that it's coming. It's there. It's just, you know, we haven't been able to get to the level where we know we can get to. But, you know, we're not far off at all.
What's the next step in getting to that stage? And you've got an international break coming up, I'm sure will help, but what are the steps to getting to where you want to be?
Of course, it's, you know, we're going to international break now. The boys will go away, and and then they'll come back, and you know, the ones that are staying will train and do everything that we have been doing. Like we say, as long as we keep focus on what it is we have been doing, and just build on that, like I say, I think it will be coming, and we'll turn them draws into wins.
All right, then, let's get right into the talking point, shall we? I guess the first talking point before we get onto the two main ones is that Town scored from a corner. AJ, which is something we've talked about. You know, set piece coaches have got two of them, and we sat watching before the game, them rehearsing, practicing the set pieces, the corners, and Jacob Greaves kept heading over, didn't he, as they practiced that. To see him actually, you know, score in the game, clearly that's a good thing. Before we get onto the main talking points.
Yeah, Jacob Greaves in the way somewhat annoys me from set pieces, because the amount that land on his head, given how big and tall physical he is, he doesn't score that many, but also he has scored three. Okay, one is in pre-season, but three this calendar year. Liverpool away, of course, pre-season in Auxerre, and now this one. It's so important, and we spoke about it in the Premier League. They're not going to have many opportunities from open play, so you need to capitalise when you get your set pieces. They haven't had hardly any opportunities from open play so far this season in the Championship. And it's good that they've been able to capitalise off a set piece. Goalkeeping left a little bit to be desired, and this one, Zetterström kind of comes out, tries to get it. It's a deep corner from Ashley Young that kind of gets flicked on a little bit. And to be fair to Jacob Greaves, he positions himself well, gets his body in front of his marker and manages to head in. A little bit of a gift. It'd probably be one of the easier headers that he's going to score. But A, they all count. And B, it's the right kind of confidence booster that Ipswich A, can score from set pieces. And B, that he can be a threat as well and get himself on the score sheet.
Yeah, right then. Let's get into the two big talking points, Rossi, which are clearly George Hurst penalty that wasn't, got him booked for simulation, and then the Lewis Chavez challenge on Jens Kajusta. So 1-1 it is, and we're going to circle back at some point to talk about the goals that Town conceded, because that's another talking point. But at 1-1, George Hurst, who had a bit of a stinker of a game, you've got to say, surges into the box. Matt Clark, who's had his number all day long, Clark kind of dominated that physical duel, clips him, almost kind of scissors the ankle, and Hurst goes down, admittedly slightly flamboyantly, down in sections. And we all go, Penner. And somehow Hurst gets booked. Now, obviously, where we are, we've got the benefit of replay, so we're getting replays, and it's, you know, a stone wall penalty. You were pitch side, so you didn't have that. What was your impression of it? Kind of sitting there watching it in real time.
I'm not going to be helpful because I was the other end of the pitch. So obviously at Bolton Road, we've got to be in set positions. Of course, we have two photographers for home games. So good old Steve Waller was the north stand end. I was obviously Sarah Ralph, you know, south stand. So yeah, didn't see any of that until obviously after the game and seeing the highlights. But yeah, definitely a pen. And I'm sure, yeah, Hurst was not happy with the ref because, like any striker, you're going to go down when you get contact. And maybe, yeah, he went down a bit dramatically, but sometimes you've got to do that. You know, dark hearts, and we've said that before, haven't we? Even Luke Wolfton said that last season. This team don't really have dark arts, really.
They haven't got what, sorry?
Dark arts?
Yeah.
Oh, dark arts.
Yeah, I'm going to say. Yeah, anyway, moving on.
Move on. But yeah, should have been a pen, but wasn't given, so...
Yeah, it wasn't given, AJ. And reflecting on that in the press box, Stu said, well, maybe it's because he made a bit of a meal of the challenge. But then, of course, there's also the argument that unless you do that, you don't get decisions. Had he kind of not gone down, he wouldn't have got the penalty anyway. So where do you stand on that one? And also, clearly, we don't have VAR anymore, but this is one of the occasions it might have been quite useful.
Yeah. I think he was within his rights to make at least a bit of a meal of it. If there's contact, then you're supposed to make the best of it. And that's what you're taught at top level football. And you see it, especially in the Premier League. How many times, and I know he's going to be the first name that comes to my mind, how many times have you seen that Mo Salah feels contact in the box and he's within his right to go down, and he goes down like he's been shot in the back. Like, it's just how it works in the Premier League, and you see it across the board with top level players. So I don't have any kind of gripes with him doing it. Given where the referee's standing, I think he should do much better with the decision. I always try and be lenient, and I said this a bit in the Championship season last time. It's not easy, is it, when you've got one first-time view at it, and that's it. So, yes, he's in a good position for it, but if you don't have the benefit of a replay like we did, then it's much harder. On the flip side, yes, would have been a good time for VAR, but how many times have we seen VAR has actually proven just to be a total waste of time, like Manchester City away, Leif Davis getting brought down, or the Leicester City fiasco, Portman Road, or whatever happened with that Jack Clarke penalty against Everton. Yeah, I'd still rather be without it and have moments like this, as frustrating as it was.
I'm going to stick with you then, because the next, and in terms of talking points, the next big one, the other big one, is Lewis Chavez. It gets... At that point, the game was pretty spicy, wasn't it? It was bad tempered. Tarby were clearly wasting time and doing everything they could to frustrate Town. And then Jens, who had been absolutely fantastic, and we'll come back to him in due course, because I thought he was brilliant with the Zora in midfield. He gets felled by another challenge from behind, and as he falls, Lewis Chavez kind of lunges in, and for want of a better word, kind of kicks out at him. And catches him sort of in the arm / chest area. And it's one of those ones that gets worse every time you watch the replay. Lewis has since come out and said it was totally accidental. But, you know, on another day, that could have been quite easily a red card.
Should have been, I think, to be perfectly honest. Again, another one where you look at the photos and the videos and the referee stood right in front of it. Mm. He's in the perfect position for it. You could kind of see at the time that it happens that Travis turns his head back to Kajusta. So I'm not buying it personally. I'm going to be honest. I'm not buying this idea that it was accidental. Look, it's difficult. Lewis Travis is a very competitive and aggressive midfielder. We know that from his time at Ipswich. I think he quite enjoyed playing the pantomime villain, didn't he? And we saw that on multiple occasions in this game, for example, coming off incredibly slowly and winding the fans up who were booing him, doing a nice clap across the entire stadium. There were different things that we saw from him. I think as well, there could have been a bit of frustration that he had been embarrassed twice by Jens Kajusta in this game, who just breezed past him, showed the clear levels in quality when Kajusta just made him look silly a couple of times in midfield, had the opportunity to lash out, and he did. For me, that one's a red card, another one that the officials have got wrong.
I'm going to play Kieran McKenna and also John Eustace, because he had an interesting take on this post-match. Before I do that, Rossi, you got some really good pictures of this. Did you get a good view of it live, or were you consumed by clicking the old cam, taking the snappy snaps?
Yeah, I will admit, when you are in the zone, getting those snappy snaps, sometimes those sort of incidents sort of go away, because you're like taking a picture of that, then you move on to something else. And I didn't see that incident until I obviously saw it online, and then going through my pictures, I went, oh, there it is. And obviously, yeah, you see, with my view, Jens basically has been trampled on by Lewis Travis on his arm. But yeah, watching it back, Lewis Travis is a very lucky boy. If VAR was involved, then you'd think once again they would have looked at that and gone, dangerous play, and he would have been off. But I have to admit, I watched the game very differently to you boys in the press box, because obviously you've got replays, but I'm looking through a lens, and sometimes I do miss things, because normally I'm sending photos over to you, or I'm just in the zone trying to get a certain picture of a player, especially when there's like subs come on. Like I was for the first 5 minutes when Ivan Azan was on, I was like just focused on him, just trying to get as many pictures of. Is that bad pronunciation? How am I saying it?
Ivan Azan.
Do you know which one Ross has really struggled with of the four? Darnell Furlong.
Oh, really?
He's had real struggles.
Ageli. What's difficult about Darnell Furlong, Ross?
I think I've been saying Furlong for some reason.
Darnell Furlong.
Yeah, I don't know.
And Ivan Azan.
Yeah. I'll get there in the end, don't worry. Although I didn't get there in the end with what player was it last season? I was struggling with.
It's
most players. No, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's one player. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Anyway, let's get back to this challenge. I'm going to play John Eustace first because he was the first guy who came in. He spent the first probably 3 or 4 minutes kind of moaning about how much time had been added on, suggested it was some sort of world record, and he couldn't believe he asked the ref where he got it from, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the end of the presser, Stu asked him, obviously, about the two town incidents. And this is what he said, because he's gone from being very chatty to suddenly not quite as loquacious, it's fair to say.
John, sorry, you mentioned some refereeing incidents in the game. I'll ask Kieran McKenna about some in a moment, so it's only fair to ask you. The booking for simulation for George Hurst and a Lewis Travers tackle on Jens Kuster that may have been a red on another day. Did you agree with the referee's decision on both of those?
I can't remember the Hurst one. I didn't see Travers either. You know, listen, Travers is a competitive player. you know, I don't know. I couldn't comment on that. You know, I'm sure Kieran will comment on it. And, you know, but I won't.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so he couldn't remember the massive penalty controversy, and he didn't see Lewis Travis almost kicking a hole in Jens Kuster. But Kieran McKenna would comment on it, and here we go. Let's hear from Kieran.
Again, it felt like the most broken game. I didn't have my stopwatch on, but it felt like the most broken game I've been involved with. That's a big challenge this year. The minutes of ball in play in our game so far has been incredible. First game is 44 minutes, I think on average about 46 minutes at the moment. I think it makes for a really poor spectacle. I don't think it's helping the league. I think it's poor for the league. I understand why it's heading in that direction, and it's much more at the moment than our last time in the division. But I don't think it's. I think it's a real backward step. But it is what it is. It's what we have to overcome. But yeah, I don't know what the ball in play in the second half will have been. But I think it will have been really low. Most amount of injuries I've ever seen on the pitch without anyone going off. Injured without being able to count them, anyone going off injured, and 60 minutes of added time without VAR probably sums up what the flow was. I thought George Hurst's was a penalty at the time. I cannot accept that the ref gives that from where he is from that angle. When you see a defender dive and go to floor and clip at an ankle without a microscope to see how much, but when a striker is at full stretch and knocks it past him, it doesn't need much contact. Any contact in that situation is a penalty, and for me there is contact, and I haven't seen the second one back, but it looked stonewall honestly from where I was. But maybe that's an Ipswich lens, but I didn't even think it was an argument from where I was on the sideline. So but everyone can have their peace and say what they want to say.
There we go then. I don't think we're going to hit 45 minutes. We might have to have 16 minutes of added time ourselves for this podcast, because there's still quite a lot for us to talk about. So that's the two big talking points there. Quite interesting, the contrast between the two managers. John used it. Oh, I didn't see it. I can't remember it. Time wasting then, AJ. That was another point that we just heard Kieran talking about. Of the four games that Town have played so far, Kieran has referred to two of them, Birmingham and this one, as barely a football game. Because of the, I guess, the physical approach and the fact that ball is in play for such a little amount of time. Derby started time wasting, felt like at 0-0, and then continued to do that throughout the second half. You mentioned Lewis Travis, who, when he was substituted, he started walking off the pitch. Then he broke into a jog, which somehow was slower than walking. And it took him an age to get off the pitch, and they were doing that again and again and again. And I was surprised, I think, that there was only 13 minutes added on, because it felt like it should have been more than that. Is this something that we're just going to have to get used to? Because how can I put this respectfully? Teams that maybe aren't on Town's level footballing-wise are going to think this is the way that we can compete, is by making it a bit of a scrap and an ugly game to watch and frustrating them as much as we possibly can.
The gap in the Championship has only got wider. And we saw this last year where you have teams like Leeds, I mean, the last 2 years with Leeds, for example, and other sides, they're just clear in terms of the quality and the way that they play. And what that means is that probably over the course of the last 2-3 years where you've had the teams that come down that are so far clear, it means that sides have started to adapt and realise that even though it might not be the most enjoyable way playing it, the best way of being successful against these teams is by doing that. So yes, I think we are going to see more of it. I think that you will see it more from some teams than others. I think I said this on Saturday, where Derby and
to an extent. Preston a little bit, not quite as much, but you know, teams of that ilk will do it more, and you will see it with other sides. For example, I can imagine Nathan Jones's Charlton would be the kind of team to do it. There'll be others. You won't have it, for example, I don't think, when Sheffield United come to town, if Ruben Sayers is still in charge, because he's the polar opposite to that. So there is definitely an aspect of you do have to get used to it, and you do have to find ways around it. I think that the way the referee handled it was quite good. I think 13 minutes was probably about what I would have gone with. I think this idea that it should have been 7 or 8 is absolute nonsense from some Derby fans that I've seen. I think it was handled quite well in terms of the stoppage time, in terms of how it was handled during the game. You also have to have a faith in the officials that they will be able to deal with these things. They are supposed to be cracking down on these things. Thus far, I haven't really got that faith, to be perfectly honest, but it's difficult to find a way around it, isn't it?
Yeah, our old friend Carl Fuller, I think, has actually worked it out. And he estimated it at, or worked it out as 23 minutes of time that should have been added on, which would have been extraordinary, wouldn't it, if that board went up and it was 23 minutes. Can you imagine? Anyway, 13 was more than justified. Kieran made a particular point in his press conference about keepers going down injured and the amount of times that happens, and then the keeper miraculously stays on the pitch, you know, never goes off injured, but spends a lot of time on the floor. Anyway, moving on. Rossi, they look like they're going to lose. 2-1 down. Derby was shithousing all over the place, time wasting. Sitting next to AJ, he's basically already written that Town have lost. And I said, oh, you're going early. And you went, well, doesn't really look like, you know, I feel fairly confident, doesn't it? That's fair enough, mate. It didn't feel like Town were going to get a level. It really didn't. And then Jack Taylor, who'd come off the bench, gets felled in the box. This time it is a penalty. Felt like it might even be the last kick of the match, Rossi. George Hurst off the pitch. First thought is, who's going to take it? Sammy Smodix? Chuba Akpom? No, it's Jack Clark. And I must confess, I and Stu both kind of went, oh, I'm not sure about this, Jack Clark taking this penalty. But to be fair to him, he showed the balls of steel, did he not? It was a great penalty, and fair play to him for stepping up, and a big moment for him.
Yeah, because his Town career would have been over. I don't think no one would be able to, like, yeah, look at Jack Clark the same again. I know he's obviously had a tough sort of spell since signing, but if he missed out, that would have been, yeah, not good. But I will admit, I wasn't confident at all when Jack Clark did step up. I was the other end of the pitch, as I mentioned, so I was a long way away from it. So I just sort of like just sat there and just waited. So I thought, oh, Steve's got that sword. He can get a good celebration and get the penalty, because it's no point in me getting a side on sort of thing. So I watched it with my eyes closed and I was like, come on, please, please, please. And he did score. And yeah, balls of steel, as you mentioned. So yeah, fair play to Jack Clark. That's a big moment, a pressure penalty. I know it's at home and you've got the North Stand cheering you on, but how the game was going, you just thought, oh no, that would be the worst moment after what just happened. And yeah, fair play, got the goal. And I'm sure that would give him a bit of confidence as well, because as I said, Jack Clark's had a tough start to life at Town. I'm pleased, sad to say, Ali, if Ali sort of stepped up for that, you'd like, oh no, if he was obviously available and, you know, playing. But yeah, I was just having a little chat with the next photographer next to me and going, I don't know who's going to step up for this, because I was looking on the pitch and I was like, maybe Ashley Young could have stepped up. You know, he's a veteran, experienced man, but there's no one else sort of obvious candidates. I don't know if you guys were thinking the same, like you think was going to step up.
Well, we thought Smodix. That's what we were talking about. So for Clark, who, you know, interesting at that point, was playing left back, by the way, with Leif Davis off the pitch. It would be. No one actually asked about whether or not it was always going to be Jack Clark, as he's like the backup penalty taker, or whether it was literally just him going, "Nah, I'm going to take this." But yeah, I think the consensus was it would either be Smodix or Akpom on press row, wasn't it, AJ?
Yeah, I think so. Looking at it, I mean, there, Smodix and Akpom are two former Golden Boot winners at this level, aren't they? And they've had previous for doing it. I like the fact that Jack Clark stepped up and done it. And look, he's been a penalty taker before. He was Sunderland's penalty taker. I just had fears, and a bit like Ross alluded to, I had visions of it being an Ali El-Hamady situation against Bristol Rovers, and I don't think it would have been quite as kind of, given where Jack Clark is and the player that he is, it wouldn't have been like, it's a hard one to come back from, but it would have been a real sickener given that it was a penalty to equalise deep into stoppage time. We'd also had to deal with kind of Carlton Morris, ex-Norwich, of course, got right in his face before the penalty. He was kind of trying to square up to him almost. A bit of a kind of a bully striker. Trying not to use any derogatory terms or expletives about him. But yeah, he was not the nicest behaved, I'd say, Carlton Morris in the build-up to that. But yeah, full credit for more than anything for Jack Clark for stepping it up. Took it really well. He's someone that I feel, even when his confidence is low, he still backs himself. He still takes shots from range. Still will step up and take a penalty. And yeah, deserves real credit, not just for finishing it, but also just for going up there in the first place.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the game finishes 2-2. Let's talk around themes arising from the game, because as I said, I felt at the end of the game, it was like, how have they not won that, given, you know, the decisions that have gone against them? But equally, they didn't play very well, and we can't kind of sugarcoat it. I felt that it'd be interesting to get your boys' take on this, that the play is just not quick enough, particularly in the final third. And I would say Jaden Philogene was a big culprit of this on Saturday. He just takes too long with the ball, and he'll end up sort of finding himself double marked, and he kind of just runs down an alleyway and loses the ball or whatever. But there's not that, when Town were in their pomp, it came so easy to them, the way the ball was moved around and, you know, it's fizzing around. And it just feels now like that is so much more difficult for them. And I appreciate it's a new team and new group and new partnerships, but there's just not that dynamism there once was. Certainly watching on Saturday, AJ. You got any thoughts on that? They're really, clearly, they're struggling to create. They still haven't scored a goal from open play, other than the own goal against Southampton. And that's not something we expected going into this season.
Yeah, I mean, on the flip side, and it's not a huge problem, it's good that the defence and midfield has shaped up quite well and look quite good. But yeah, it's the attacking play that seems to be the problem at the moment, and it's not what we expected, given the quality, given that Ipswich have two left wingers who they've spent about, what, 20 and 15 million pounds on. They have two Golden Boot winners. They've got George Hurst, who was, I think, second favourite for the Golden Boot going into the season. They've got a right winger they've just spent 12 odd million or 11 and a half million pounds on. They've got a lot of depth and quality now. And you look at the options on the bench, and it's looking much healthier as well. It just isn't clicking. There's two parts to this. One is, I feel like when they get into good areas and you see these really nice passages of play starting to come, it always feels like there's one or two passes away from it happening, and it's just over here, or one player doesn't realise where the other one's moved to and it rolls out of play, or it's then easily defended. That's the bit that I think will be an easier fix and will come with time. The one that confuses me is the one you've alluded to, which is when they hit on the counter, which is so crucial, they run into space, and then it just feels like they slow down and they wait for everyone to catch up. It's almost like they don't have the belief to take on their man or to go alone. And they're thinking, especially, I've noticed this with the wide players, and you saw it with Jaden Philogene, as you mentioned, and a little bit already with Casey McAteer, where they'd get into these good areas and then it'd be like, right, slow down, stop. Let's see where I can pass the ball. Where can I go next? By the time they've done that, they've waited 2, 3, 4 seconds, and Derby's three beefy centre-backs have already come back and got into the box. And then everything becomes so much harder and you're trying to break down that low block again. So that's the frustration for me. It feels too pedestrian. That is something that I think will be harder to fix and to kind of get sharper and piece it all together. But they don't have long to fix it, do they?
No. Do you know what I do, Rossi? This is what I do. At the moment, we know that Leif Davis is kind of trying to play a new inverted role to accommodate Jaden Philogene ahead of him. I would bench Jaden Philogene. I'd get Jack Clark back out on the left wing. He wants to cut inside anyway, doesn't he? I mean, that's literally what he does. Every time he gets the ball, he comes inside on his right foot. And I'd say to Leif Davis, you play like you were before. Just keep bombing on down the side of the wing. Get those assists, get those cutbacks into the box. Jack Clark can do his dribbly boy cutting inside on his right foot. That seems to work. You know, obviously we know he did well at Sunderland with that. He was a superstar with that. So that would be my very amateur approach to fixing that particular part. Do you reckon there's any merit in that?
No, I will admit, it's sad to see Leif Davis at the moment because he's not been on it, but it's because of the role that he's been told to do now. And I'll be on the phone to Mark Ashton right now. I went, you know what? Mark Keith could be the man if
you're sort of. That certainly would be interesting. Me in charge of town, that would be interesting. So that's just one thought I have around the game, because I found Philogene particularly frustrating on Saturday, I must say. The other thing, AJ, I'll ask Ross about this, because I'm going to stick with Ross. You alluded to there that generally the defence has been pretty solid to start the season, but you have to say that the two goals they conceded on Saturday were shit. I mean, completely carved open by long balls. First one, obviously, Leif Davis gets back, handles the ball, immediately knows what he's done. He goes to the ground with his head in his hands. He's not hurt. He knows he's handled the ball. He knows it's a penalty. And the second one was just a hoof from a goal kick. Dara O'Shea miscontrols it on his chest. And it was Rhian Brewster, wasn't it? Picks it up and then basically just runs through the defence and scores. And Rossi, go on, AJ. Defensively, those are not good goals.
Yeah, no, they're not. I mean, in general, Ipswich's defensive play has been pretty solid across the season so far when you look at the chances they've conceded. They've been punished by momentary lapses, which you'd kind of also be punished for in the Premier League, and Championship sides have taken advantage of it as well. This game was definitely the worst that I've seen it so far this season. When you look at the first goal, I don't understand how Brewster ends up in so much space, to be honest, because it's him who draws the penalty. It's a ball over the top that people just aren't aware to. I think it comes more down Ipswich's right side. Dara O'Shea is too high up. Not really sure what Alex Palmer was doing for this one. Gets caught in no man land and chipped. Leif Davis is back and throws his body on the line, gives away the handball. Can't criticise him for that because it would have been a goal otherwise. And then the second one, is in two parts. O'Shea's really heavy touch lets it kind of bounce through. Good work from Brewster, but how is he allowed to just dance his way through Ipswich's defence? It's kind of weird criticising, because then I look at, other than that, and Derby didn't do a great deal, did they? And you can say the same about Preston, and maybe even Southampton, to be perfectly honest, didn't create that much kind of in terms of real clear-cut chances. But this is where you give teams an opportunity, and these are good players they're coming up against as well. Carlton Morris played in the Premier League. Rhian Brewster was a £30 million striker and technically has a Champions League medal to his name. And they've been punished, and you need to be sharper to these moments. And even though they're solid defensively for 85 of the 90 minutes, it's only five minutes. It's only a couple of opportunities that will allow good quality opponents to come in and punish you.
Yeah. Okay, right. That's negatives from the game. I had one or two, actually, massive positives, and that was the midfield pairings. The first time we'd seen Azor Matasiwa and Jens Kuster to play together. We know they've done it before in France. And for me, boys, that is the one shining light from this game, because good Lord, those two together, I think, could be absolutely exceptional at this level. Jens Kajusta looked like a completely different class in this game. Like, he was that kid at school. You know, there's always like one kid at school no one could get near in the playground. Like, he was just so good. There was one point where he literally just held a player off. It's like, you're not getting the ball. I've got the ball and I'm going to do something with it. You can't get near it. And the amount of times he was doing these little flicks and turns, and he was behind pretty much everything that good that Town did, particularly in the first half. And then in contrast, Azor Matasiwa, watching him live, he is so strong. He's such a strong player. And the way he's constantly in the middle of stuff, getting in the way of things, he's a bit of a destroyer. And I think those two together, Rossi, they could be the best midfield pairing in the Championship. I'm already feeling confident about saying that, as long as they both stay fit. But Azor just looks like he's bulletproof.
Yeah, you know, still adapting to English football, but obviously last week at Preston was always going to be a tough one at Deepdale, but yeah, that partnership, I'm pleased McKenna's been able to get that sorted quickly. He's able to get Jens up to speed, and Jens was just silky and smooth as we know he can be. You know, that one turn that led to a potential goal where Jaden Philogene, you know, shot, you know, into the side net. And I thought that would have been incredible. Just watching that back, and if that did go in, we would have just kept watching that back and back because of Jens's turn and the ball. But yeah, great partnership. And that's what we need, this team, McKenna's team. You know, we've had that before with Morsi and Luongo. We need a good partnership in that midfield to start the possession, start the attack. So, yeah, it's good to see them both up to speed. And I'm looking forward to them playing against a team who wants to play football, because that's when they'll be on their very best.
Yeah, AJ, we said pretty much every time now, Azor gets better each game. And I thought he was tremendous on Saturday. I think he was your man of the match. But Jens as well, I mean, he's just class, isn't he? There's no other way to describe him. He always looks like he's got more time as well. That duo, am I getting too excited in terms of saying that it could be the best in the league?
No, not at this stage. Let's keep Jens fit. That's an important one. I think they complement each other so well. You've got the physical, brave battler who gets himself around, gets into scraps, wants to be aggressive in midfield, and someone like he used to, takes people on, dances through, is involved in attacks. It's just such a nice battle, kind of complement, the way they complement each other. It's such a nice balance. That's what I was going for. I think that's pretty perfect, to be perfectly honest. And the fact they've got other players that can come in, like Nunez, who I think has similar qualities there as well, but Matasiwa and Kayusta, having played each other in the played with each other in the French top flight, I think, that's one that will continue to grow over time.
Yeah. Other positives, which we'll just briefly come on to, because now I want to finish inside an hour, which would be 15 minutes of added time. The bench looks so much stronger already with the new signings, and clearly that was a super strength of Town last time they're in this league. Chuba Akpom, I thought, looked lively when he came on. Had a good opportunity, didn't he, from distance. And Ivan Azon, Rossi, who I think is going to become rapidly a bit of a cult hero / fan favourite. He's got that cast that he wears on his wrist / hand, which is a good luck thing, apparently, a bit like Jamie Vardy when he was scoring all the goals for Leicester. He doesn't actually need to wear it. It's become a good luck thing. And you look at him, you think, right, he's a bit of a unit, a bit of a tank. But he uses that as well. I mean, he was right in the thick of it, wasn't he, in terms of throwing himself around as soon as he came on the pitch.
Yeah, the shark. Which I'm sure we'll hopefully be able to use at some point when he scores a very important goal. He was very close as well, wasn't he, at the end? Lily headed a goal in. It was like a ball into the box, and I thought he was about to score from it, but wasn't the case. But yeah, he's going to be a man that I think will become a bit of a cult hero. We had Pablo Canago back in the day in the 2000s. I think he hopefully will follow suit, because we hadn't had many Spanish players before, but just for just him just throwing himself about, and just he's going to run 100%. He's just going to work so hard, and I just can't wait to see him fully up to speed and scoring some goals.
There was a bit when he came on, he challenged for a header. He got elbowed in the face and went down kind of clutching his face, and then he realised the ref was going to kind of stop play, and he immediately just bounced straight back up, and he was like, no, I'm okay, and got straight back into it. So I was really encouraged by our first sighting of Ivan Azon. Rossi, have you got anything else to mention before we think about wrapping up? I think AJ's got some potentially breaking transfer business to look at. But anything else to mention from you, Rossi? Either from the weekend or indeed deadline day today? Do you think, for example, that Town need to go out and sign a backup for Matasiwa, who, you have to say, as I just said, looks pretty bulletproof. But clearly, if he goes down injured, they don't at the moment have a natural backup for him.
Yeah, that is obviously the obvious sort of position we need to strengthen in this window on deadline day. But who's going to come in to be a backup? Will it be like, Jordan James also been linked and all that jazz, but it'd probably have to be like a young player who's willing to sort of compete in that position. But if it doesn't happen, I wouldn't say it's the end of the world. You just hope Azor does stay fit. But yeah, you do like that like for like. And McKenna obviously love those options, but yeah, we'll just have to see. But anything else from the game? Not really. Just hopefully Town can have a good international break. Obviously, a lot of players, Irish players, going away with their countries. And then the team, the players who are staying, hopefully they can work on a few little bits and bobs and get ready for Sheffield United.
Right, let's put a cap on it by playing the final clip, which I just realised I haven't played, which is McGinnar talking about the start to the season and kind of thoughts going forward, which seems a good time to play it before we finish this pod today.
Yeah, I think, look, whether it was 3 points, 6 points, 5 points, 7 points, it's been a really, really difficult summer in almost every aspect. Certainly by far the most difficult in my time here. And yeah, we come out the back of that period now and we go on to a next chapter. I wouldn't feel, I don't think, drastically different if we had 5 points or 6 points. Of course, points are important. We want to win our first game as soon as possible. I feel like we're not far away from that. But we've come through an incredible amount as a club over the course of the summer and as a team over the course of four games. We now move on to the next phase. I think by Monday night we'll be in a really strong position in terms of the depth and quality we have in the group. That's not been the case right through the summer, but we'll be there by Monday night. And now we're on to the next challenge because we have to now bring that group together. We have to keep working hard on the training pitch. It's going to be really difficult to do that over the international break, of course, but we'll work really hard with those that we have. And really importantly, we need to work really hard with a group coming together and building that sort of shared mindset and mental strength and resilience and all those things that you need to be successful in the Championship. So it's been an incredibly difficult summer. We've got a real big challenge ahead of us. In some ways, it's quite exciting because, you know, I know there will be expectation on us. I know how difficult it is and how it's going to be. But I really believe that we can still have a really good season. So that's the challenge ahead of us. We're going to take it on full steam ahead, and we'll do what we can over the international duty. But the reality is we're not going to get the group back together until 48 hours before Sheffield United, and then we'll be out there again competing. So it's going to be tough. I think we have most of what we need in the building now to be successful, and you know, it's up to us to do that work and trying to pick up some results in the meantime that keeps giving us the time to do that work.
Okay, that feels like a good way to end the show as we enter the 16th minute of added time aptly on the 45-minute original runtime I was aiming for. Just a reminder, friends, support our sponsors. We have two of them, and they're both excellent local family businesses. Stardust Spirits is the first. They've been with us for a few months now, Gary and the team there. You can use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk to get 20% off all their excellent alcoholic concoctions, flavours, beverages. Some really good stuff that they're doing there. And also our new one is Molecular UK, based out in Leiston, who manufacture cleaning products for the automotive, agricultural and commercial industries. They're a family-run business operation for more than 40 years, making products to the highest possible standards. And you can visit their website, which is www.molecular-uk.com, to buy stuff or find out more about them. And if you are going to buy some of their excellent products, you can use the code KOA10 at the coupon section, and that gives you 10% off at the point of checkout on all their stuff, which is a fantastic deal. So jump on board, support those. Really good to have those two local businesses associated with the mighty KOA. Right, we're coming to the end of part one of today's double serving, you lucky people of the Kings of Anglia podcast. We've talked about the transfer window so far. We've talked about the Derby car crash / compelling game of football we witnessed at the weekend. And who knows what we might be talking about later on tonight, after the deadline has passed, the window has slammed shut. AJ, are you able to come back in here? We're not expecting, it's fair to say, a lot of incomings, or indeed maybe any. It's more going to be about outgoings today, isn't it?
That's the expectation. I mean, in terms of the bits that I've been tapping away in the background while also trying to talk about the Derby game. It looks like Chio Ogbeno is going to be heading out on loan. Sheffield United, the destination for him, looks like. Reports from BBC Radio Sheffield that he's been given permission to undergo a medical. I saw Leicester and Wrexham were interested, but looks like he'll be heading to Yorkshire, to Bramall Lane instead. Won't be able to play their next game, of course, because that's against Ipswich. Mm-hmm. Has been a report, which I understand is true, that Luca Fletcher is going to sign for the under-21s from Manchester City, loan with an obligation to buy. Exciting, hey? Yeah, I think it's going to be more about exits than signings.
Imagine if Chio Ogbeni had signed for Leicester. They literally just swapped right wingers, gone on loan, yeah, with McAteer coming the other way. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Rossi, any more thoughts from you? If Luke Wolfenden does go out today, That's another sad one, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, obviously Ipswich boy, You know, it's had a roller coaster time at Town. You know, three different pools, and obviously back-to-back promotions and playing in the Premier League. He probably never thought he'd ever do that, you know, especially with Ipswich Town. It will be sad, but like anybody, he's at an age now. He wants to be playing week in, week out, and he sees that at Ipswich Town, it's not going to happen. So we wish him all the best. I'm sure we'll do a whole podcast around it, you know, if he does leave on deadline day to discuss his time at Town, because there's a lot of chapters in Luke Orphan's Ipswich career.
Absolutely. Right then, friends, I'll leave you there then. Part one is in the books. Part one of the double dollop of KOA today. We'll be back in a matter of hours after the deadline has passed and the window has closed. Sorry, slammed shut. We'll be back later on tonight to talk about what's happened or indeed hasn't happened today, plus reflect on the window as a whole. So until then, friends, we will speak to you later on.
Supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.